Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy Kevin and Greg get from American politics. I'm neither of these two. I'm DJ from Virginia, a Euroskeptic Tory stuck in America, so I'm a libertarian for now.
I am Greg Matuszek. I'll be your liberal Democrat from Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm Emily Brewer from Virginia, and I will be your moderate Republican against DJ's wishes.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, getting infinite joy from this in California, where I'm a moderate Democrat.
You can find us at the More Perfect Union Podcast at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, plus blogs and commentary. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and share our link at your Facebook newsfeed. Well, as bizarre as American politics has been and continues to be, the United Kingdom zoomed right past it for the best reality show ever this week.
No, we mentioned this last week. Like, this was going to be, like, your best episode ever. Like, this was, I mean, the only thing better would be, like, oh my gosh, Margaret Thatcher came back from the dead and had all sorts of great things to say, like, for the first time ever.
Let me simply state, Margaret Thatcher could crawl out of her grave and start eating people, and I would still want to give her a fourth term as prime minister. But that wasn't nothing else.
Well, the job is going to be open.
But that wasn't it this week.
The job is open.
And
so
indeed it is.
Why don't you explain it in very simple terms for those of you, for those people who were, like, you know, in a coma this week, or, you know, perhaps vacationing in, like, under a rock.
Or in
what happened in England this week?
What essentially happened was David Cameron, the prime minister, now soon to be former prime minister, essentially finally handed over the referendum that he promised about 3 years ago to the British people. And they responded by surprising everybody, including themselves, and voted for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. It was about 52-48. England voted to leave. Wales voted to leave, which was a real surprise to me. Scotland and Northern Ireland voted to remain, but not by nearly enough to override England and Wales. And the pollsters got it wrong. The pundits got it wrong. The investors got it wrong, which was really hilarious because they priced in a Remain victory and started buying stuff up. And then they had to price out the Remain victory and started selling it all again. The prime minister was so distraught that he announced his resignation, effective in 3 months' time. The leader of the opposition is now facing an internal coup from his own party. And one of the columnists actually stated, there is a real question now if anyone's running the country.
But that's why they have a queen, isn't it? I mean, if I understand British government, they have a queen. They have a prince. They're fine. They're fine.
I think there's only one thing that can make any of this better, and I think it would be like a Burr-Hamilton style duel. I mean, let's just get it done.
Well, I don't know if we're necessarily going to see any of those this time, but we do have, unless you really know what the EU is like and have been following it closely, you really can't understand it, let alone understand why 17.5 million Brits basically voted to leave. This is not like a smaller version of the United Nations where everybody sits around, holds a bunch of meetings, and nothing happens. It's not like NAFTA, which is a free trade zone that has nothing to do with what each individual country sets as their foreign policy outside of North America. This is an institution that has toppled two democratically elected governments. It has dictated budgets to three or four other countries. It has essentially imposed its own vision of human rights on all of the 28 members of the union, or now it will be 27, and it has really created what is being called a democratic deficit, a real one, not the one that supposedly we have over here, to the point where for a lot of British voters this was a matter of their last chance to take control over their own destiny again. For all that Barack Obama's critics think about him. He has never tried to maneuver Jerry Brown out of office and replace him with a technocrat from the Schwarzenegger administration. It just hasn't happened. You know, Janet Yellen does not call up John Kasich and tell him, no, you will have this tax rate, you will spend this much, you will spend this much on that, you'll spend that much on this, and you do not have the alternative of anything else. We don't do that here. That's what European electorates have gone through. And it's something that the British said, you know, enough's enough. We're not taking this anymore.
But DJ, and how much of it do you think is an issue of true economics, which is what you just laid out, versus, you know, everything that we've heard about this being about racism or
xenophobia?
Xenophobia, thank you. How you know, what do you think is the makeup here?
Well, I wouldn't actually – I mean, I've used economic topics about it, but I wouldn't say it's an economic issue as much as it is as it is about democracy and sovereignty. And part of that is the ability to, for lack of a better term, control one's borders. Now, part of the thing that I think people get confused about is the European Union has something called freedom of movement. If you are a citizen of any of the 28 countries that are in the EU, you can essentially go anywhere you want within the Union, live anywhere you want, and access the various access most of the benefits, not all of them, but most of them, that a citizen of the country in which you live would access. And what I think people don't recognize is when they hear the talk about immigration in the UK and they think it's akin to this country when we talk about, you know, essentially Donald Trump building wall of Mexico. Voters over in Britain weren't necessarily obviously they weren't concerned about Mexicans, but as the heart of the British Empire and as the heart of the British Commonwealth, you know, Brits have had South Asians in their country. They've had African British in their country all the time. It was other nationals within Europe, in particular Eastern Europe, that was the argument. I found it rather bizarre that people were screaming racism when in fact the immigration issue was about different white people. Now, one could argue that perhaps there was a xenophobic angle to it, but if you follow the debate within Britain, it was the immigration issue even itself was just one of a multitude of other matters. The amount of money that Britain sends into the EU that it doesn't get back, the various laws and regulations that have nothing to do with immigration that Brussels imposes upon Britain, what Brussels does to other countries in the EU, that particularly in the Eurozone that Britain might have to deal with in future years if they get sucked into deeper integration, and really the disconnect between what the leadership in Brussels, which is really the EU's capital, by the way, that's why I use the city a lot, a real difference in objectives between what Brussels wants out of the European Union and what the British electorate, as stated through British governments over and over again, want out of the European Union. And it was just because the only thing that made sense to Americans, the only thing that made sense to us was the immigration issue, because we don't have any of those other issues that Britain was dealing with. I think too many people in America just looked at what happened over there and grafted the American political spectrum onto the United Kingdom, which is just a bad, and it's a terrible idea. The last time anybody tried something that stupid was in 1992. When John Major won re-election as conservative leader, and a bunch of people who should know better in Washington said, oh my goodness, if John Major can win in this kind of economic environment, that means George Bush will crush Bill Clinton because John Major won. And we saw what happened. Bush got the worst result of any incumbent running for re-election ever. It was just a reminder the United Kingdom is not the United States and vice versa.
Well, and that's a great question then. And you're probably going to say the exact same thing. Is this a signal then that Trump actually, you know, is this a sign of the times that Trump
Trump and nativism and xenophobia are going to rule the day here? Yeah.
Right. I would say no for a few reasons. But first, I will say the one thing that we need to, I guess, be careful of and watch is the effect of the disconnect between the polling and the actual result. It created what I would call a shy leave factor, and where voters who are willing to vote for leave may not have been as open to telling the pollsters as they otherwise would have. I mean, the difference was still barely within the margin of error, so one could argue it was a statistical blip. But if, say, Hillary Clinton manages to recover her favorabilities and get her unfavorabilities below 50%, you could start to see a shy Trump factor in the polls. Now, granted, if Mrs. Clinton gets her favorability below 50%, she'll probably even build on the lead that she already has. So that'll be a counter. But, you know, if you see a poll, if Mrs. Clinton gets her favorabilities to 40 or 45% and she has a 20-point lead in the polls, it's more likely that she'll win by something closer to 15% because there would be a shy Trump factor. But I think so long as both major candidates have the high unfavorability ratings they have now, I don't think you'll see a shy Trump factor as an issue. But for the most part, one, this was a binary referendum. It was leave or remain. The American election will have at least four candidates that people will all talk about and a bunch that others won't talk about. Gary Johnson himself, who's my candidate for president, also saluted Brexit today. So pro-Brexit Americans now have two candidates to choose from. Donald Trump, who was dumb enough to land in the one place that didn't support remain, that didn't support leave, and talked about how happy they were, and got himself blistered for it on Twitter in wonderfully Gaelic language, by the way, and Gary Johnson. So the anti-status quo vote does not have to consolidate around one person, which is very happy to me because I don't want it to consolidate around Donald Trump, obviously. So that's one reason why I think it's going to be different here. Also, again, folks like Michael Gove and Boris Johnson, who bizarrely enough is considered to be a British version of Donald Trump, despite being elected mayor of London twice, despite being elected an MP three times, and despite being the editor of a major journal of opinion over there. If Donald Trump ran National Review for 10 years, was mayor of New York for two terms, and served as a U.S. senator for a term, then he could be mentioned in the same breath as Boris Johnson. Otherwise, it's laughable.
Right.
But in any event, you know, that kind of intellectual heft that was behind the Leave campaign is really nowhere to be found behind the Trump campaign for obvious reasons. I can see why Trump would want to attach himself to the Leave movement and make it sound like something that could be replicated here. But there are a whole bunch of reasons why it will not, in my opinion, be replicated here.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Emily, you know, what do you think?
Yeah. And looking at all this Brexit stuff, I've been reading articles, so many of them actually, because I look at this and I see people are saying it's an immigration issue, it's an economic issue. I think that it's different things for different people, especially because, you know, unlike American politics, I think there's at least seven credible parties. Is that correct, DJ?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seven, unless you include Northern Ireland, in which case you're up to 11.
Okay. So seven just there of credible parties. And a lot of those people were split very much like some of the Democratic and Republican Party is here. But the way I look at this is that everyone had a different reason. I'm hearing a lot of people, I've been watching YouTube videos, you know, exit interviews, and they're talking about national identity. They felt like their national identity was lost. And I thought that was a really interesting spin on this, is they felt like their country was no longer theirs. And I don't know if that's an immigration issue as much as it is almost like a Big Brother feel of the European Union. I kind of wish that I could be there and experience something like this, just to see what it was like on the ground.
Yeah. My question is, to build on that, I could have just Googled this week, but it didn't occur to me. When you say Brussels, who exactly is calling the shots in Brussels? No one, to my knowledge, has been elected, you know, the CEO of the EU or the president of the EU. Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they have been. But who's making these decisions that the Brits rebelled against?
Well, that's a large part of the problem, in that in theory, the government of the EU is something called the European Commission, where each country delegates a person to what is essentially the EU cabinet, and they're given a certain file. Nobody knows who these people are. Ironically, the European elites try to come up with something quasi-democratic in coming up with what trying to have the European parliamentary elite parliamentary alliance groups nominate candidates for president of the European Commission. The problem was the alliances themselves were all multinational messes. Some individual national parties changed alliances in the middle of campaigns or after the campaigns. It was a complete and utter mess. So that's one part of it. You've got the European Parliament itself, which has some authority, but nowhere near what a national parliament would have. You have a European Court of Justice, which was started about 7 years ago, which essentially takes the European Commission of Human Rights, which no one has ever read, and imposes it on all 28 member states' laws.
Okay, I got
you. You have the. I'm not even halfway through.
I know, and I'm really regretting asking the question.
Exactly, and you and I can just shrug our shoulders and go, "Well, thank God we're Americans. We don't have to deal with any of that stuff."
But they had.
The British weren't that lucky. Yeah. They had to, and they have to, and sadly, 27 other member nations still have to deal with that.
Right. Wow. Wow.
Okay. Last question about this. Does anyone see this as a way that Texas, because they've been talking about this, and maybe even Alaska, they might see this as a, Texas?
I actually see Texas joining the EU. I think it's a very natural fit.
Sure. I mean,
we have plenty of really good fights in our own country that, I think we have some pretty cool things going on here. It's just not as complex, I think,
Yeah, I don't see Texas happening. I don't see Alaska exit happening. We don't have the kind of history that Brussels does. When the federal government has acquired more power at expense of the states, they do so openly and in full view of everybody. The 14th Amendment was enacted by Congress in 1868, and the federal government has acted through normal legislation, through rules that everyone knows and anticipates and examines. It's nothing like what the structures in Brussels have managed to do to the member nations. So no, I do not see a parallel to Texit or Alexit or anything else.
We have our own problems, and actually not we. I'm going to say, Greg and Kevin have their own problems going on right now. With their people.
Yes, we do. The Democrats are not playing that nice leading up to our big convention that's coming up in Philadelphia in the last week of July. Greg, what do you think? Is Bernie Sanders helping things? Has he gone far enough? Has he not gone far enough? Or is he just being, as I like to say, a stubborn old coot?
I wish this is where we need video, because I'm just rubbing my temples. I've got my head to my desk. He's just driving me nuts. Yeah. Won't be a plot. Yeah. It's a process. Washington Post just said that the article this morning was the diehard Bernie people who were going to go to Trump, which was 20% 2 months ago, is down to 8%. Okay. It's done. Okay. And it's fine that he's going to do this and he's going to run through this process, but it's done. The process will happen.
When you say it's done, there's a couple of moving parts here. In terms of whether the Bernie or Busters are, how many of them are actually not going to vote for Hillary, obviously that is decreasing and it will continue to go down as Donald Trump continues to show his colors. But my more immediate concern is the show that, because these conventions are shows, they are the kickoff of your official campaign. They get huge tune in, or at least you hope they do. And my concern is still what's going to happen at the actual convention. And so, I am not convinced that it's going to be a smooth show.
Oh, it's not. But the original plan was to have 100,000 people, storm the gates.
No, that,
and that's not going to happen.
No, but there will be protests outside, which was going to happen regardless.
But there will be 10,000 people easily outside. There could be 25,000 people inside. It will be pretty civil.
From everything I'm reading, guys, so what I'm seeing is the big issue really is that Bernie's pushing really hard for this $15 minimum wage. And I think from what I'm hearing and seeing on Twitter and whatnot, it seems like some of the committee members are apprehensive to put that in their platform going forward. Is that what you guys are feeling or seeing or hearing?
Well, I think it will go through. I think it's already been put in.
The headlines that I've seen is that they've more or less adopted 15 as a goal, you know, which gives her plenty of wiggle room.
They put 15 in. What they didn't do is they didn't tie it to inflation afterwards.
Okay. So
I'm actually reading this here in terms of what they wanted versus what they got. And one of them was it was a $15 minimum wage tied to inflation.
Okay.
Inflation tie that they wouldn't accept.
If that's the issue, that will be papered over, because I have heard Hillary Clinton talk about tying whatever the new minimum wage is to inflation. It's come out of her mouth. So they're not going to, you know, go to the, you know, mattresses over that. But the other issues that Bernie is still holding out for, and he spoke about this today on the morning shows, is he wants her to adopt free college, not debt-free college, but free college. And he wants her to adopt wording that says that healthcare is a right to all citizens. Now, those are two things that she's not going to be able to do. She can't come out now and say, you know what, after a six-month primary battle in which I said Bernie Sanders was absolutely wrong to be trying to foster free college on the country, I'm now in favor of it. She can't do that. And I don't understand why he doesn't understand that.
Well, there's two things going on, though, here. I mean, obviously, she can't adopt that type of language because, A, it would be the death of her, you know, any momentum she had about everything she said about Bernie.
Right.
I think if she did that before the convention, it would almost encourage people to still vote for Bernie because she would look weak.
Right.
And then, secondly, he's setting her up for failure, assuming if she wins a presidency.
Right, so it's not going to happen. So what does he think he's doing? That's what I can't... You know, you want to be as... You want to give the person the benefit of the doubt. And everybody knows, look, yes, he's not a Democrat, but he caucuses with the Democrats. It's in his interest to have a Democratic administration for the last years of his 70s when he has, you know, some time left to accomplish the things that truly are meaningful to him in his career. And what does this man think he is doing by you know, saying things like, well, my people may or may not vote for Mrs. Clinton. It really depends on what she does and whether she adopts our platform. So I'm just bewildered.
It's very odd. His whole, you know, what is she going to do for us? Yeah, even though we've lost, we're in the minority, polls are showing less and less, but what is she going to do to get this 8% and my numbers? And I have fewer and fewer cards to play with, but I'm still a powerhouse. It's very strange. And he does less and like he wasn't at the Senate filibuster. Where was he
for the filibuster?
You know, and it did not hurt his – it didn't help his brand that I'm not bought by the NRA, you know, that he couldn't stand up for 10 minutes, you know, and you know, do his rant, you know, or say his thing. And I know there's been a lot of talk about how this is just a photo op or whatnot, but it's not helping him, you know.
Okay.
Well, in terms of the platform fights and in terms of dealing with the platform, these are the sorts of battles over verbiage that parties have. I mean, parties have them all the time. They had them all the time. They're a bit more open now because media is much more open and more citizen driven, if you will, than it used to be. But, you know, at the 1984 Republican convention, the platform committee split itself in half over where to insert a comma over taxes. And actually, where you put the comma completely changed completely changed the sentence. And Newt Gingrich's people, he was the House Minority Whip at the time, Newt Gingrich's people basically overrode the president's people on where to place that comma. And
commas are important. You know, if you don't believe so, go read the Second Amendment.
So you have, you know, these are the sorts of things, the battles that seem utterly immaterial and useless and incremental now. But I remember, and I know I don't mean to bring us back to the first topic, but I remember reading about arguments within the Conservative Party manifestos, which usually nobody ever read and nobody ever believed, about how hard the party would push on Europe, would the party oppose this regulation or that regulation, all these other sorts of stuff. But it was all about making incremental progress within the party until you get to the point where you can get a major victory. And this is one where Bernie's people, and, you know, this is going to be longer than Bernie, Bernie's people are taking the long view, and frankly, the Clinton people are taking the long view by saying, no, these are not things we necessarily want to bring into the platform and tie ourselves down with right now. You know, the argument about putting in a carbon tax was about, you know, Bernie's people wanted a carbon tax, and I'm guessing Clinton's people wanted to just keep any discussion about climate change, dealing with the carbon emissions trading scheme that creates a new artificial asset and a wonderful investment bubble for her Wall Street friends. But in terms of what happens in July and in terms of what happens in the fall, nobody's going to remember any of this.
No,
they're not supposed
to
remember any.
Here's an interesting one that I just read about. The Trump people are asking that Kasich and Cruz don't get a chance to speak, especially Kasich, which is interesting because it's in Cleveland. And he's the governor of the state. You know, there should be, usually the governor of the state would get a chance to speak at the convention.
Well, Trump, I'm going to go but out. I'm going to say
something. Trump is already going out and saying he should not get a chance to speak until he endorses Trump.
Trump is right. Trump is right. And I won't get a chance to say that too many times in my life. Trump is
I
right.
Know, I know. I'm not a Republican, so I feel like I don't get a chance. I shouldn't get a chance to weigh in on. I don't weigh in too often on Republican matters. So, Emily, how do you feel? And I know you're biased a little bit.
Oh, because, you know what? I'll be honest. Yeah. I'll be honest. Is I think that any other candidates, I don't think they should have opportunity to speak. The only exception I would say for Kasich, to be honest, is it is his home state. So I think that it would be appropriate for him to be able to do some welcome to his, you know, home state kind of thing.
But I
hate to say I agree with Trump.
But here's the thing. There's also another reason why Trump is doing this that reveals a weakness, frankly, in that there are still a bunch of delegates who are trying to find some way to escape from his nomination.
Oh, I know.
He knows this. And
I know.
And the last thing he needs is former opponents who have not endorsed him yet going out there and getting prime time at the convention. God forbid any of them figure out that they can, in fact, if they're really willing to take this shot, and I've talked about this, I've written about it, to simply say, you know what, we're just not going to nominate anybody this time. We're not going to have any ballots, and that way Trump doesn't get nominated. Nobody violates their first ballot pledge. There just wasn't a first ballot, and we let Gary Johnson have a clear shot at Hillary Clinton and see what happens.
Yeah, sure. Can you? Yeah, and they'll get the same string players from the Titanic to play for the Republican Party.
So
hang on, Greg, what was the catch?
You know, the Republican Party will go down just like the Titanic.
I'm still looking for the catch, Greg. What's the problem here?
Well, that's not deep enough. That's the problem.
I have a pitch out there. So, you know, obviously I'm going to the convention in a couple of weeks.
Yay!
And,
yeah,
I have a plus one.
Yeah. Hey,
so
listen.
I am actively accepting applications to be my plus one.
Oh, we're gonna have to talk about this. Can we actually talk about this on the air? I wanna apply for that. But what does your plus one entail?
My plus one entails all of these social mixers and events.
Really?
Yes.
But not the floor.
I might
apply. The floor you cannot get on. No.
Oh man.
But you can get inside.
Okay.
I
so
might apply. I'm dashingly handsome. What else? We'll talk about this later.
Okay.
I lie quite a bit too.
I was going to say, Emily, if for any reason Kevin and Greg don't make the grade, you know, I'm sure Corey Lewandowski is free.
Oh snap!
That's harsh.
We're talking about the dating game here. I like it.
You know,
everybody knows he got fired, right? Like, that's not a secret. Yeah. Everyone knows, right?
No, it's not a secret at all.
No, Corey wanted to spend more time with his family. He needed more quality time with his family. That's why he left.
Wait, his family is CNN?
Yeah. Yes,
right.
It is.
Didn't they like hire him right after the gate?
Yes, they did. And the CNN people are pretty upset about it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But let's go back to Corey Lewandowski. This is a great I'm glad you brought up this topic. So this was the guy who was the leader of the Let Trump Be Trump movement. I'm sure all of our listeners kind of know who he is. He was the original campaign manager, and then he sort of became the co-campaign manager when Paul Manafort was brought on. And, you know, rumor is that those two were fighting like cats and dogs, only a lot worse. It was like cats and dogs with guns. And Manafort apparently fired the killing shot.
What I heard, it was Ivanka and yes. her husband said, Lewandowski said, you know, they were like, we can't work with him.
Right.
It's either him or us. It wasn't Manafort.
Right. And the two older sons, whatever their names are.
Eric and... Adolf, I think.
Eric and Lyle, I think, are...
Oh, okay.
No, wait, wrong family. Same outcome, wrong family. That's a Menendez joke for people that don't know, the Menendez family.
Yeah, okay. I got it.
We have listeners.
I was going a much more obscure angle because it doesn't really surprise me that the kids would prefer Manafort over Lewandowski. Manafort, of course, worked with Viktor Yanukovych over in Ukraine. So, when it comes to megalomaniac, corrupt politicians who like to spread the wealth around to their kids, I mean, Paul Manafort's the guy. So, that doesn't really surprise me.
Please tell me you just made up that name, that he's really a goalie for the Russian hockey team.
What, Viktor Yanukovych?
I've never heard that name.
Are you kidding? He was the guy who got kicked out of the Ukraine after mowing down his own people in 2014.
Okay.
You didn't know about the Maidan Revolution?
I guess I didn't tune in the news that day. Emily, did you know about this? Am I really that uninformed?
I had no idea, but you know what I think, and maybe I'm not going to be a conspiracy theorist, I swear. I swear, I promise, I swear, but can anybody just think for a second that maybe Trump didn't do this to steal some headlines? I mean, what if this was the plan all the time? Like, let Lewandowski shake it up and then bring in a pro?
Well, I think there's something to be said. I don't think it was to get headlines for the general public, but I think you're onto something. I think part of it was to solidify himself with the Republican leadership, who didn't like where his campaign was going. They do like Paul Manafort because a lot of them know him. They've worked with him. He's kind of a more mature, stabilizing presence in the campaign. So I think by getting rid of Lewandowski, who I also believe Ivanka and the rest of the family didn't like, and there was a lot of bad blood there, I think that it also worked to calm down the jittery nerves of people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and these other, you know, heavyweights who were really reticent about where this was going.
And allow me to just say that if the Republican Party is actually more reassured by a guy like Paul Manafort, I am so glad I'm a libertarian now. Oh my God!
Yeah, no, he's bad news.
Oh,
I do think too. In when they get to the general election, after we pass conventions, that the baggage that Lewandowski had by the infamous punch, I think that was going to come back to bite them. And so I think that also probably didn't help.
Yeah.
Did you see that as a punch? Or because I've seen the video. I mean, there was a reporter and he grabbed her by the arm and he said, "No, this way." I mean, there wasn't a punch at all. I mean, and the woman even said, "Hey, I've got arm marks on me." It wasn't a punch. Is that what we're talking about?
Right. The female? Right. Yeah, the tussling situation. Yeah,
he grabbed her by the arms.
Yeah, he only grabbed her and threw her on the ground. That's no big deal.
No, she never went on the ground. She was never on the ground. He pulled her aside, and it was never. Okay. No, even the police were like, "Yeah, we're not arresting you for that."
Well, okay, so it's a bad situation though, regardless. So that they need to dump that.
Okay, so speaking of bad situations, it is. Everybody probably saw this morning's polls, the latest polls. Mr. Trump now is losing by anywhere between 5 and 7 to even 11 points in the ABC poll. And the internals do not look any better. What do you guys think? Where is this going?
Well, first of all, I would note that Gary Johnson is at 7 to 9% in all of the polls. So that's good. But no, this does not surprise me at all. The Democrats are consolidating behind Mrs. Clinton. Even Bernie Sanders said, well, yeah, sure, in a general election, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Whereas the Republicans have guys like George Will who have said, you know, the hell with it. I'm not going to let the door hit me on the way out. Spare no seat for me. I will not come back.
Yeah, George Will left the Republican Party this week, just like you did. He's obviously been reading you.
He left the party.
Does that mean a lot to you guys? I mean, for me, George Will is just – I mean, I'm not a big fan of George Will. But for you guys, is that like, oh, my gosh, George Will? George, I mean
– Well, it's validation for me. It's validation for me.
Okay, I realize that. How about you, Emily?
I've got to be honest, it's not for me. But I also grew up in a slightly different generation where he wasn't – as much front and center, I feel like he wasn't who I went to for my voice of reasons.
So we're running up on our dead stop time. Do we want to go to predictions?
Sure, why not? Let's do another round because they haven't picked any. Let's not do the VP selection. Yeah. That's no more fun.
Yeah,
that's no fun. I'm gonna throw you off for a loop. Tell me the next Prime Minister of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Kevin.
I think it's that Nigel guy. I don't really understand their politics, but it's the guy that said, "Let this be our Independence Day."
You're going with Nigel Farage?
Yeah,
his name was Nigel Farage. Okay, Greg says Nigel Farage. Kevin says Nigel Farage. Not happening.
By the way, his VP will be Elizabeth Warren.
Well, it could be Boris Johnson, maybe Ian Duncan Smith.
We'll go with your first one, Boris Johnson, because Ian Duncan Smith doesn't want the job. Emily.
I've been thinking Boris Johnson. We actually had a call about this the other day, but yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be Boris Johnson.
Okay. I will also probably say Boris Johnson. That's my most likely guess as well. So. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll try to keep it towards American politics next week, but this week has just been so much fun. Once again, remember you can find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. That includes blogs and commentary. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And remember, if you want real debate without the hate, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. And please share our link on your Facebook newsfeed. Thank you all so much for listening once again. You'll hear from us next week.